They've infiltrated the top positions. This goes all the way to the top, boys. We gotta investigate this. What's going on?
Nah, they checked out the bottoms too.
But
you set that one right up there. You teed it up. Teed it right up. I took a big whacky at it, and there we go.
It's rare when you hear the intro as it's actually being said.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Hello.
And Ryan.
Ah,
damn.
A crisp.
You got a good pineapple
Shasta
on that one, bro. That was loud as fuck. I might steal that sound effect and sell it on Fiverr.
You should see like the how the Audacity shows like the sound waves. You should see what it looks like when that thing just popped. It was kind of cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Audacity.
This goes crazy.
The caucasity of his soda pop.
Oh, that pineapple Shasta hits perfect today.
That sounds delicious, honestly. I just went to the secret Costco palette sale place in town, which is where we do a lot of our shopping now.
Costco palette sit what?
Yeah, there's a place in town, basically, they buy pallets that from Costco of, like, ding and dent stuff, and they sell it for, like, I don't know, 60% the cost at Costco, which is already low.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So, like, I'll go there and get, like, a box of protein bars. It's normally, like, $30 for a box of 14 for $12. So, like, yeah. So, we be stocking up. But I went there today, and they had LaCroix, and I drink a lot of sparkling water because I basically only drink water. And I need to mix it up, right? So I got like a pallet of fucking LaCroix. It was like 30 some odd LaCroix for like $6.
What?
There was another one there too, bro. And I was very tempted. I also got 200 matcha tea packets for like $12.
I would drink LaCroix if it didn't taste like TV static looks.
See, it's the thing, though, like, if all you drink is water, then it's pretty good. To me, it tastes like non-alcoholic White Claw.
Okay, but, like, that's the entire reason you drink White Claws, for the alcohol.
No, but
otherwise it's pointless.
I like seltzer, so, like, it's good. I mean, I'll drink, my new favorite thing to really mix in is Pepsi Zero. I really like it.
Okay.
It's fucking good.
Okay.
So I'll mix that kind of stuff in, but you can't be drinking soda all the time. It's real bad for your fucking teeth. It's just not, you know, even...
I actually haven't drank soda in a while.
Yeah, even like non-caffeinated or sugar-free soda is not great in your mouth. So, seltzer's pretty good. I do know how
what
to
you're
get
talking
the
about,
flavor
Steve.
In, by the way.
It is great in my mouth.
Do you,
it's delicious.
Jesus Christ. Is that like a pickup line you use, by the way? Why should I date you? Trust me, it's great in my mouth. Jesus Christ. That's like the new Crest slogan for like a toothpaste. Crest, it's great in your mouth.
All right, seriously, we all need to stop recording so I can write this down and call somebody real quick.
Hey, baby, I'm great in your mouth. What? I'm grating cheese in your mouth. Speaking of oral fixations, who are we talking about this week?
Well, funnily enough, Steve, we're going to be talking about the lavender scare.
You know what's funny is I literally just made the color of my Google Keep note for this episode fucking lavender. What the hell are the odds of that? I'm not even fucking kidding. I'm actually going to send a screenshot through the chat that none of our listeners can see nor have access to. Ever.
This is an audio medium.
Yeah.
Okay. Even.
Oh my god. Anyway.
They cannot see this.
So what is the lavender scare? Is that like where they didn't think they'd be able to produce the constituent component parts of the color lavender for painting? Is that what it was?
No. Funnily enough, it was a witch hunt against homosexuals within the United States government.
Nah, we wouldn't do that. To gays? Why?
Everybody loves the game.
This fucking country. Anyway.
Who's going to be sassy in the office if we get rid of all the gays and they don't let black people work during this time period?
There's my note. Fucking made it lavender. I swear to God, just before you said anything. Oh, man. Anyway. So, yeah. Oddly apropos, so, because, you know, the current administration's going after everyone they possibly can, so.
So prior to the 1950 investigations, which is, like, the really big ones, United States institutions had developed this sort of system of regulations and tactics in which they used to analyze personnel to uncover homosexuals that might... might be within the government and would become part of the mechanisms that were used during the Lavender Scare in order to, like, carry out this witch hunt. The historian Naoko Shibasawa states that the system was related to a general expansion of the bureaucratic state during the late 19th century, with institutions that increasingly systematically characterized people as either being fit or unfit, including homosexuals in the unfit category, along with people who are designated as, quote-unquote, the criminally insane or, quote-unquote, morally depraved, even though they didn't take consistently any regulatory action on this until later.
Okay. All right.
Margot Kanaday and Michael S. Sherry have stated that Cold War homophobia, as well as, quote-unquote, a moral sex panic, that dates back to the Great Depression, occurred in a context of, quote-unquote, perceived shifts in gender relations, race relations, the ongoing dislocations of late capitalism, continuing urbanization, economic and foreign crises, post-war adjustment, and the entrenchment of a consumer society and culture allegedly dominated by women.
Wait.
Despite this...
Wait. What? A post-war society allegedly dominated by women? Where?
Post-war adjustment. No, and then an entrenchment of a consumer society and culture allegedly dominated by women, in that most of the material culture of the 50s was sort of geared towards women.
Consumer society. Okay. Thank you. I don't think you said that the first go-round, but it could be my ears. So...
It was geared towards women who were traditionally the housewives, who traditionally did the vacuum.
Now, Susie, I remember you don't want Gary coming home and beating the shit out of you, do you? Make sure you got the all-new fork. That's right.
My great-grandmother had Sears Roebuck catalogs from, like, the 40s in her house.
Yeah, but those are motility devices. That's for, like, when you're in the bathroom and you got to take a big shit, you know? You're not actually going to buy
your phone on the table.
Yeah, the Sears Roebuck for your average class, that class.
But they used to sell washing machines.
It was like the Sky Mall. You know, they sold houses in there. They sold pre-built houses in the Sears Roebuck catalog. Literally.
But you can see it was definitely geared towards women because it's like, oh, buy this new vacuum and your life is better. It's like, wait, what?
What? Definitely in the post-war period, it becomes more slanted towards women. But despite this, the exclusion of gays from civil service did not seem to be considered prior to the Cold War. In contrast to the military, the State Department was unconcerned about homosexuals in war.
I mean, like, I forget why, because I don't really remember much about it. Like, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was bad, largely, right? Or was it...
That was their way of putting it in without actually dealing with it.
Right, because it was like they kicked it down the road, kind of.
Yeah, but if you said you were gay, like, you were fired. Like, you were dishonorably discharged.
Exactly. So it was, ultimately, it was like a douchebag move. But, like, my thing is, like, why would you even care? You know what I mean? Like, for the most part, you don't even know who's gay and who isn't. Like, the only gay people think are gay are, like, people who are flamboyant, you know? Like, it's not just them, you know? It's not just Harvey Fierstein. You know? I'm over here. I got six cocks. You know, it's like, you know, it's not that guy, right?
It's not Richard Simmons.
So like, So their sexuality shouldn't matter. And of course the Cold War would precipitate some kind of fucking critical like view of it. Dickheads.
Steve, you know, we're putting on war, not a production of The Birdcage. Okay.
My word.
The issue was not on the public's radar either, except perhaps in the sense of perceptions that the diplomatic corps was consisting of effete privilege types. So there generally was a perception, you know, that the State Department was run by, you know, like nerdy and effete people, so they didn't really come up very much. In 1947, at the beginning of the Cold War, and with heightened concern about internal security, the State Department began campaigns to rid the Department of Communists and homosexuals, and they established a set of quote-unquote security principles that went on to inspire the creation of a dual loyalty security test, which became the model of other government agencies, as well as the basis for a government-wide security program under President Dwight D. Eisenhower's administration. Under the criteria of the State Department security principles, quote-unquote disloyal persons included communists, their associates, and those guilty of espionage, along with persons known for quote-unquote habitual drunkenness, moral turpitude.
Ben out.
Turpitude. I think that's actually Ryan's record. Vanity play at turpitude.
Wait. What were the last ones? Let me see if I can just bat 1,000 here.
Oh, financial responsibility and criminal record.
Oh my god, bro. Dude, you're banned, bro. Listen, sorry.
I'm going to get executed. I'm going right to Guantanamo, bro. Don't let Trump read this. Fuck.
Brother, I'm so sorry. Yeah, ICE is coming by any minute. They're going to chill you out. Holy shit.
I think I just heard a... Shit.
Oh, shit.
And these individuals were to be denied federal employment. With the inclusion of the quote-unquote sexual perversion provision among those considered unsuitable for federal employment, discrimination against homosexuals was implicitly built into State Department policy, and it was grandfathered into federal governmental protocol and procedure.
Yeah.
Between 1947 and 1950, over 1,700 applicants to federal jobs were denied the positions due to allegations of homosexuality.
Allegations?
Yeah, just the allegations.
So no facts, just fucking allegations.
Well, I'm sure it was part of the background checks where they go around and they talk to your neighbors and stuff. And they're just like, yeah, let's just say that he enjoys the company of men. And they're like, who doesn't? No, you don't get it. He's spending long hours with them. So you're saying he's an alcoholic? No.
So you're saying the man likes cards. You're saying he plays cards. No.
Saying he's loving poker, huh?
No.
He loves to dance? Well, who doesn't love to dance?
Right. I hate that shit, the language. Dude. I think I've brought this up before, but, like, I enjoyed singing, playing the piano, and reading, like, novels when I was a kid. And what's gayer than that? Like, in the fucking 90s, right?
Love me a good novel.
You know, but, like, I'm a kid. I'm supposed to be outside playing football, and I'm inside and fucking reading Mary Higgins Clark because my mom told me it was a good book. And then I go, and I'm like, okay, so then I go outside, and then I play sports, and I go inside, and I play the piano, and, like... I remember experiencing all that, like, that even then it was being inculcated into us that it was like, you shouldn't do that because, you know, that's fucking gay. And it's like, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
As kids, that's how they did to us. Like,
but it was 30 years after what Steve's talking about. Yeah. 30 years and we're still fucking dealing with it, you know?
Well, you know, Steve, the problem wasn't the novels. It was the Mary Higgins Clark, as we discussed before.
Yeah, dude. Shit's gay.
I mean, to be fair, I used to love playing with Legos instead of going outside to play football. But, you know, it's the same thing. It's
in my defense,
play contact sports. Like, you know, like, oh, fuck that. I'd rather play Legos.
What's gayer than contact sports, too, right? But in my defense,
grabbing all over each other's sweaty
bodies. Yeah, like if you're really into
wrestling each other to the ground.
Like I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say Spike from the Little Giants was gay. You know, because he was really into it. You know, he really wanted to touch other boys, you know. And then he didn't want the girl to be there because he said, Spike, don't play with girls because he was not interested, right?
Oh, so, man, shit. Now you're bringing up goddamn Little Giants conspiracy theories, and I might actually have to look into this.
Well, it's funny enough, the next episode is going to be on the annexation of Puerto Rico. So.
followed by the Little Giants iceberg.
Oh,
conspiracy iceberg.
But we I don't know why I have to make it about me, but it always reminds me of like how uncomfortable and annoying it was to have to deal with that. So I can't even imagine if I actually was gay, then it would be like, holy shit. Like, okay, so I guess I can't do anything I want to do, you know, because the government might get accused of it and then fucking told I can't work. Like, excuse me, motherfucker.
Yep, basically.
Fucking ridiculous.
The language of the Lavender Scare was purposely vague, as instead of being referred to directly, homosexuals and perverts were often called quote-unquote moral weaklings, sexual misfits, moral risks, misfits, undesirables, or persons with quote-unquote unusual morals.
Yeah, see, like, Steve, your tri-state area accent comes out on the word vague. Vague. Morally vague. Nothing morally vague about the fucking Phillies losing over there. The Rays? They lost to the goddamn Rays. Nothing vague about that.
Clear as day. No, that was, that was definitely enough, shit. I can't do it.
I was there like, some Saudi guys accent. What are you doing?
There were some guys behind me because they were mad that they bet on the they had some prop bets on the Phillies and they didn't get them.
That's when you hold your phone up and you change the font size to like 30 and you just start texting your friends. These idiots bet on the Phillies. And you make sure that they can see it. You know?
That's awesome.
And then you go around and you're like, you know, they tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, buddy.
The euphemistic term security risk was thought by many people at the time, many historians since assumed to be simply a lesser version of a communist, someone with communist sympathies but no outright party connections. Loyalty risk and security risk were considered very similar or essentially different terminology for the same thing. But when defining the difference between the two, between a loyalty risk and a security risk, government officials typically explain that loyalty involved a current state of mind, a willful desire to betray secrets, while security involved behaviors or associations that might lead one inadvertently or unwillingly to betray a secret in the future. Thus, the government and State Department gave themselves the ability to expel government officials without any evidence of them being a communist, but by purely being a risk that they might be due to an inadvertent tendencies or possibilities.
So it's like, listen, you're gay, so you might be a security risk. We don't know for sure, but you know how you gays are. You can't keep it a secret at all.
Like in the way that like they would treat women as a security risk potentially. Like in that way, like I don't understand what way are they security risk.
That's kind of the point. There is really
but they didn't just say security risk. Like they meant some. They probably had some dickhead who went up there and fucking grandstanded about it. I'm just interested. How do they justify it?
Well, kind of the thing is that they could be caught in a compromising situation because homosexuality is illegal in most states.
Yep.
Doing a homosexual act, and that there could be blackmail material involving that, and that could be used by foreign agents to manipulate the person. But it's sort of a catch-22 situation because the only reason those things are illegal is because they've made them illegal. Like the same people have gone and like made these laws that made it illegal. It's like, yeah, because you know the law says that we made, you know, you're a security risk.
Fucking internal affairs. We checked the computer. Computer says we're good.
Cops can investigate themselves. Everything's perfect. No, nothing to see here.
Even before the 1947 establishment of the State Department security principles,
47.
The United States military. Yeah.
That's the year Pakistan came about.
Right? That was a really random comment, but okay.
I had to design a logo for an ex-girlfriend one time who was Pakistani, so... That's how I remember things, right?
So, those... Those principles that before they've been established in 1947, the U.S. military had developed discriminatory policies targeting gay men and lesbians. In 1940, President Roosevelt and his Selective Service advisors were convinced by a psychiatrist of the need to implement screening programs to determine the mental health of potential soldiers as to reduce the cost of psychiatric rehabilitation for returning veterans. Although the initial plan for psychiatric screenings of military recruits included no direct reference to homosexuality, within a year, direct references were added. This development in military bureaucratic processes contributed towards the momentum of the military's preoccupation with homosexuality during World War II. The new psychiatric screening directives and procedures introduced by the military introduced the military to the idea that homosexuals were unfit to serve in the armed forces because they were mentally ill, a charge from the military's traditional way of approaching homosexuality as a crime. Or a change, I should say.
I was going to say a change, right? Yeah.
During World War One, punishment of homosexual soldiers was first codified in the American military law, and during World War II, final regulations were declared and homosexuals were banned from all branches of the military in 1943.
The greatest generation.
Jeez. Listen, so just like the 40% statistic that we know about the thin blue line, just because you banned quote-unquote gay soldiers doesn't mean that there's not still some in there, right?
Yeah, like the idea
that's
though.
A self-report. That's a self-report is what that is. That's a, oh no, we banned them all. Oh no, just 40%. No, that's just the self-report.
They wanted everyone to be J. Edgar. And really, J. Edgar was only J. Edgar because he was so fucking powerful. But at the same time, they kind of wanted everyone to be like straight and public, you know?
Well, there's that one general that Lee Harvey Oswald was obsessed with.
Walker?
I think it was Erwin Walker. Yeah. He was a general, and he was like a far right, like fascist psycho. But he was also like
that he tried to assassinate first before Kennedy.
Yeah, he tried to assassinate before Kennedy, but he was also a homosexual, and he got arrested multiple times in like Dallas, like in men's restrooms, trying to solicit sex from undercover cops.
Really?
Yeah, so he got caught cruising multiple times.
That's fucking hilarious.
Jeez.
So not only are homosexuals, you know, still in the military, they're also getting to the rank of like general and.
Wow.
They've infiltrated the top positions. This goes all the way to the top, boys. We gotta investigate this. What's going on?
Nah, they checked out the bottoms too.
You set that one right up there. You teed it up. Teed it right up. I took a big wacky at it, and there we go.
It's rare when you hear the intro as it's actually being said.
Despite all the regulations, the need for troops allowed for loopholes regarding the acceptance and rejection of homosexuals to fight in the war.
All right, don't do it in front of everybody, and we'll let you in. Come on, come on.
It's just like that scene in Stripes. Rich, what's this thing here on this form here? I'm not allowed to ask you about that. Don't answer that.
It's actually much like in the Army Now, where Pauly Shore and Andy Dick get that close to making out in front of the guy. He's just like, oh, you're gay, huh? Kiss him. What? Kiss your friend. You don't have a problem with that, do you?
Oh, my God.
Is it hot in Chad?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, what a great scene.
Around 4,000 to 5,000 of the 18 million men that had been in consideration were turned away during the war for homosexuality. Those serving in the military were ordered to report homosexual acts by other soldiers that were serving. Between 2,000 and 5,000 soldiers were suspected to be homosexuals in the military, and women were discharged at a higher rate than men for this.
I can just imagine the Uncle Sam posters in the barracks, got the big Uncle Sam pointing at you, talking about, I want you to report your fellow soldier if you see him sucking dick, because that is against the law.
Like, it says Uncle Slam, not it says Uncle Sam, not Uncle Slam. Get your dick out of that, Sergeant.
Greatest generation, boys. Greatest generation.
Jesus Christ. Get your penis out of that, Sergeant. Make your bed.
If the influx of people into Washington, D.C. during the New Deal created the urban and professional environment...
That's what it said in Jordan Peterson's book. It's one of his rules. Get your dick out of the sergeant and make your bed. That's exactly how it was written. That's why people don't like him. He's an intolerant little fucking prick.
I can't stand him.
Yeah, I know. It's so annoying.
If the influx of people into Washington, D.C. during the New Deal created the urban and professional environments that allowed a gay and lesbian subculture to flourish, then World War II accelerated the process. For many lesbians and gay men, the war was a national coming out experience. Mobilization for World War II and the war experience gave birth to a new addition to the American social urban landscape, the lesbian and gay community. To many Americans, this visible homosexual subculture seemed to prove their suspicions that the war had loosened puritanical moral codes, broadened sexual mores, and certainly represented a viable threat to ideals of puritanical gender roles, heterosexuality, and the nuclear family.
I think you mean sexual mores, because sexual mores, that's a different thing altogether.
It's sexual mores.
Some of those sexual mores might have been homosexual.
After the war, as families reunited and as Americans struggled to put their lives back together, a national narrative rigorously promoted and propagated idealized versions of the nuclear family, heterosexuality, and traditional gender roles in the home and the workplace.
We're having that problem now. I mean, we can't let Iran join the nuclear family.
No.
Fucking bullshit.
Also, you see that shit? Just get fucking rid of the nuclear family, to be honest. But
Netanyahu. I stress the Yahoo part. He's been written about this since 2012, or maybe even before then. Like, there's video of him talking about it, like, since then, and they've never had a nuke. And, like, literally, what was it, 3 months ago, our own director of the CIA publicly said that they are nowhere near getting a nuke. And they asked Trump about it, and he's like, what did he say? He said, he was like, I don't care. I don't care what she said. What is going on?
He's been saying it since 1995.
Oh, well, there you go. He's been saying it even longer.
He's been saying it for 33 years.
I need Steve around because I didn't give a shit about politics until like 2002. So
he's been around forever. And you watch the older ones too. You can see his Delco Valley accent.
Yeah,
because the traditional homeland of his family is from Philadelphia.
We're going to shoot some missiles over there. They're not going to get past the Iron Dome, all right? Iron Dome's going to block 90% of your missile shots coming over from Iran. You're going to block. Look, I'm not even going to be vague about it, okay? They're not... Anyway, my name's Benny Netanyahu.
Did you see the video of a couple of Iran's missiles beating the Iron Dome?
Yeah, the Iron Dome malfunctioned.
Holy shit.
Yeah, no, the whole thing's fucking ridiculous, dude. We are literally in our once again, we are living through historical times, and I fucking hate it.
Sick and tired of it, bro. I'm sick and tired of being a fucking millennial.
in February of 1950, Senator Joseph McCarthy claimed 205 communists were working in the State Department. Undersecretary of State John Purefoy. Said that the State Department had allowed 91 homosexuals to resign. Only two of these were women. Following this, the administration of Harry Truman was accused of not taking, quote-unquote, the threat of homosexuality seriously enough. And in June of 1950, an investigation by the Senate began into the government's employment of homosexuals. The results were not released until December, but in the meantime, federal job losses due to the allegations of homosexuality increased greatly, rising from approximately 5 to 60 per month.
Hey, you know who Joseph McCarthy looks like? Is Grandpa Munster.
Yeah.
He does look like an old Dracula.
I mean, he is a blood-sucking piece of shit, but yeah.
You know, exactly.
On April 19th, 1950, the Republican National Chairman Guy George Gabrielson said that, quote-unquote, sexual perverts who had infiltrated our government in recent years were perhaps as dangerous as the actual communists.
What? He was just mad because there's no way.
No, it's perfect, so not at all.
His name was Guy George Gabrielson. I mean,
also during this time, I would check his credentials. I don't think that's not very American name. That sounds like a foreign name trying to make
sounds
an American
like a commie.
Name.
No wonder he's gay if he's a commie, because they're all gay. So
the danger was not solely because they were gay. However, homosexuals were considered to be more susceptible to blackmail and thus were labeled as security risks, as I mentioned earlier.
Yes, like the mafia McCarthy, and the jazz clubs.
McCarthy would hire known heterosexual Roy Cohn as chief counsel of his congressional subcommittee.
See, I can't tell if you're doing one of your tight five there or if that was real.
Oh, my God.
That's real, no, they, right? That's, like, that's well, a joke you're Roy trying Cohn, to work in?
Yes, that's a joke I'm trying to work in, Steve. No, it was like, that was like Roy Cohn is a master of...
Roy Cohn died of AIDS in the 80s. I'll leave that there and let you extract
well,
from that what you will.
I mean, that's not... Yeah, that's well, no good.
Roy Cohn... Roy Cohn
now you're
used
just,
to go
now
to
you're
like,
just Nancy Reagan, dude. Like, don't say that. Well,
Roy Cohn used to go to like Fire Island and stuff. And back in the day, John Waters would tell young gay men, because he would like throw parties and stuff, and because he was rich, like they'd want to party with him, and he'd tell them like, no, you shouldn't party with that man, because he's like, he's done more to hurt us than like any other person in Washington.
He's like the
touching you.
He's like the what's called the Caitlyn Jenner of the gay movement. Or there's not really a movement, but, you know, the gay community.
Yeah.
Because Caitlyn Jenner hates trans people.
Yeah, but, like, Caitlyn Jenner's not, like, in the government, like, orchestrating a witch hunt.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's yeah. true. Yeah, Roy Cohn's much worse. Much worse, but, yeah, similar, like...
Yeah, similar. Together, McCarthy and Cohn, with the enthusiastic support of the head of the FBI, also well-known heterosexual J. Edgar Hoover, were responsible for the firing of scores of gay men and women from government employment and strong-armed many opponents into silence using rumors of their homosexuality.
Hey, you know why they call him Hoover? And then he just gets shot.
In 1953, during the final months of the Truman administration, the State Department reported that it had fired 425 employees for allegations of homosexuality.
Fucking insane.
While the Secretary of State, Dean Acheson, reportedly defended the employees of the State Department, calling McCarthy's antics, quote-unquote, filthy business, the department responded to the allegations against it with a concentrated effort to remove homosexuals from its ranks.
Quick side is the term filthy business is a throwback kind of term, you know?
Yeah, filthy it's a sequel business. To Risky Business.
Yeah, well, like, there's a Morse code... like parlance, is FB, which means fine business, and usually say it to mean like everything's okay, everything's good, and it's like it's just like an antiquated term, obviously made in like the comes from that around the same time period, probably.
If it's two letters, why don't you just use okay in that case?
Because, well, you can say okay, but you. So Morse code, you're shortening a lot of things.
Like if you could just do one.
So for instance, to give someone a signal report, you would tell them they're 5'9". I'm not going to get into the whole what that means, but basically you say they're 5'9", right? And the proper number for it is 5'9". But to
this turns the math so fucking fast, and I'm not good at algebra.
I'm just saying, all you have to remember is the number 5'9". In Morse code, 5'9" is. ... ... So if you're doing a communication with a guy and you want to say you are 5'9", you don't do that. You say you are, the letters you are, 5NN. Because N is just ... So, like, there's a lot of that goes on, and it doesn't look like English at all. Like, you have to know what the hell the abbreviations are, basically.
And this Radio Roundup Minute brought to you by Steve.
Steve!
That's a throw out to all of our listeners that were born in the 1900s.
Still working on my...
The 1910s.
I'm at 21 words per minute in Morse code, by the way. My listening is terrible. I can send at, like, 30, but I can't... I, like... hearing it is always much harder. It's like learning any other language, you know, like you, when you learn like a language, speaking it is usually pretty easy for most people. You can say the words, you can memorize the words, but then when someone talks to you, you're just like picking up like one letter here, one letter there.
You're like, no, slow the fuck down.
No, I don't own a camel, and why would you ask that?
That's my favorite thing is the hospital is like, if I found out a patient, they're checking in, like they're just Spanish speaking. Like I know just enough Spanish to introduce myself, ask them what's going on. Yep. But then I'll tell them, hey, I'm really sorry. My Spanish is really bad. And they will immediately respond to me with Spanish so fast that it breaks land speed records. Yeah, and I'm like, please slow the fuck down.
I've said this before on the podcast, but the Polish people up north would do that all the time. If you went up to them and you were like, nie rozumiem po polsku, and they would just be like, well, how the fuck do you know how to say that in Polish? And it's like...
And you're just looking at them like, that's all I know.
Yeah, especially if you pronounce it well, like excuse me?
Then it's like, all right, this bitch does know something. Let me just fire off a couple more words at him, see what he knows.
Yep.
Turns into a test real quick, like a gang test.
Yeah, exactly.
McCarthy often...
Dzień dobry.
McCarthy often used accusations of homosexuality as a smear tactic in his anti-communist crusade, often combining the second Red Scare with the Lavender Scare. On one occasion, he went so far as to announce to reporters... If you want to be against McCarthy, boys, you've got to be either a communist or a cock.
Wow.
You want me to bleep that, bro?
I think now you should just for fucking shits and giggles.
Nah, dude. I'm not gonna do, I did that to you that one time. That was fucking funny. It's so funny because creative bleeps make it sound so much worse than it really is.
At least one recent historian has argued that by linking communism and homosexuality with psychological imbalance, McCarthy was employing guilt by association when evidence for a communist connection was lacking. Political rhetoric at the time often linked communists and homosexuals, and common beliefs among the public were similar, stating that both were quote-unquote morally weak or psychologically disturbed, along with being godless and undermining traditional families.
Oh my God.
An example of this was when McCarthy spoke on the Senate floor about two individual people, a quote-unquote Case 14 and Case 62, as communists who were quote-unquote unsafe risks, which he directly linked to their homosexuality.
First of all, I take fucking umbrage with the phrasing traditional families. You know, kind of shit. There's a lot of shit that goes on in traditional families that is much fucking worse than happening to be gay, you know? Like, Jesus Christ. Fucking ridiculous. Oh, yeah, we're a traditional family. I beat my wife and my kid. I'm not going to let them be a goddamn fag artist, you know?
And my daughter, I wouldn't go there.
I'm in a traditional family. We got to support this. The traditional family where the man can do anything he wants.
His own little fiefdom.
Yeah.
He said a top intelligence official... had told him, quote-unquote, every active communist is twisted mentally or physically. And he implied that these people are vulnerable to recruitment by communists because of their, quote-unquote, peculiar mental twists of homosexuality.
Nah, they were susceptible.
Peculiar mental twists.
Nah, bro, they were susceptible because the entire system that was in existence at the time literally made them susceptible. Because they couldn't admit they were fucking gay because you fucking assholes.
Due to the image of the State Department now being tainted with homosexuality, many male employees became self-conscious about the possibility of being perceived as homosexual.
There we go.
They often refused to be seen in pairs and made statements confirming their heterosexuality when introducing themselves.
Bro,
for example,
I'm telling you, man, 2003, my buddy Ken and I, we were up at the Jersey Shore. We were all of us were staying in a beach house. And my buddy Ken and I just decided to smoke a cigar and walk over to the boardwalk and just sit there and watch the freaking ocean and talk shit, you know? And we're out there. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. We're smoking cigars. I'm at Seaside Heights. We're watching the ocean and just talking and, you know, chatting about life and shit like that. And the fucking bike cops roll by. And the first thing the bike cop says is, how long have you been a couple?
Wow.
2003, I think. So,
did you just say that they would make statements like saying that they weren't gay when they introduced, like, "Hi, my name's Peter, and I fuck women."
They said what? No homo.
Well, well, no, it wouldn't. It wouldn't be. It wouldn't be like that. It would be an example of an example given was that when an employee was at a party, he'd say, "Hi, I'm so and so. I work for the State Department. I'm married, and I have three children."
Nah, it was more like they were giving testimony before the, you know, hiring committees, and it was like C-SPAN, and they would ask him a question, like, "Senator," and they'd be like, "Okay, I just have one question for the candidate. No homo," and then they would respond with "No homo," and it would be good. That's how they'd get in there, you know. But according to David Icke, what they meant by "no homo" is that they were lizard people. Because they're not man, you know.
That's their code.
In 1953, President Eisenhower signed Executive Order 10450, which set security standards for federal employment and barred homosexuals from work in the federal government.
Again, barred openly homosexuals.
The restrictions set in place were a cause for hundreds of gay people to be forcibly outed and fired from the State Department. The executive order was also the cause for the firing of approximately 5,000 gay people from federal employment. This included private contractors and military personnel. Not only did the victims lose their jobs, but they were also forced out of the closet and thrust into the public eye as being a gay or lesbian. A specific point of this was during Truman's loyalty program had been extended through the executive order that quote-unquote sexual perversion was added to a list of behaviors that would keep a person from holding a position in government. Many of the new regulations and policies put into place to detect and remove gay, lesbian, and bisexual people were from this. Were developed from these rules. The new procedures to search out homosexuals were frequently used to interview and look for signs of sexual orientation. They also looked at places these individuals frequently visited, such as gay bars, and they even found people guilty by association.
If they're I'm here looking for the gay people at this gay bar. No. I'm not enjoying it myself. I hate dick being wagged in my flake face. No, I'm just making sure that none of my coworkers are here.
Well, no, I think they'd be like, "Well, you're friends with him, and he's gay, so you must be gay yourself."
Yep.
Bro, what?
If their friends or family showed signs of being homosexual, they might also be suspected. By the mid-1950s, similar repressive and oppressive policies had gone into effect in state and local governments, which extended the prohibitions on the employment of lesbians and gay men to cover 12 million workers, more than 20% of the United States labor force, who now had to sign oaths attesting to their moral purity to get or keep their jobs.
Interesting. It sounds very similar to a current time period where you have to sign an oath saying that you love Trump.
And people think that's a joke too. It's like, nah, you gotta kiss the ring, baby.
Nah, even if it was like not actual policy, it's not a joke and they mean it.
During the Vietnam draft, men sometimes attempted to exploit Executive Order 10450 to avoid national military service, often by claiming to be homosexuals, lying about being homosexual, adopting exaggerated stereotypical mannerisms of gay men, or providing letters from psychiatrists.
Also known as the Corporal Maxwell Klinger.
The Ted
it is known
Nugent.
As the In the Army Now defense.
The Ted Nugent? Well, what do you mean the Ted Nugent?
Well, Ted Nugent at first, he first tried to claim he was homosexual, I think, and it didn't work. So he literally like shit himself at the draft board.
All the most American, like, old douchebag boomers now, they're literally like the biggest pussy pieces of shit, weak people you've ever met.
Well, by the way,
not for nothing, Ted Nugent's a fucking pedophile. So,
give him the double
bop.
But it was like I was telling my dad how ridiculous it was that Rocky Blyer was at a Trump rally, like fawning over Trump, like it was his like it was Rocky Blyer's like birthday party, and it's like make a wish was for Trump to be there because like Why? The man got his foot blown off in Vietnam. He left a football career to go fight in Vietnam, got his foot blown off, and then came back. And then he's fawning over this guy that, like, pretended he had messed up feet so he didn't have to go to Vietnam.
I will never understand it. It's like the ends justify the means. I don't understand. You know, like if you are a member of the military, then I really hope that you're more like the army at his shitty fucking failure parade, which is where like they didn't even march well. And the one argument I saw from a bunch of ex-military people online was they know how to fucking march. They did that shit on purpose. I believe that. I don't know if it's true, but I believe that. I think they literally just mailed it in because fuck him.
Yeah. While this was successful, other times men were sometimes drafted in spite of their proclaimed homosexuality. This was likely from a demand to fill draft quotas and out of concern that they were attempting to fraudulently dodge the draft. In 1973, a federal judge ruled a person's sexual orientation could not be the sole reason for termination from federal employment, and in 1975, the United States Civil Service Commission announced that they would consider applications by gays and lesbians on a case-by-case basis.
Jesus.
Executive Order 1045 or 10450.
There's only one class of people at the time who should have had a permanent exemption from being in the military, and it was black people and poor people.
That's it.
Fucking Muhammad Ali, they ruined his fucking boxing career. And he was, the fact that he was still considered the greatest of all time and they took his prime away from him is just crazy to me still to this day. You know, he lost like 3 years, I think. 3 whole years of like prime boxing. Like, imagine you told Mike Tyson that he couldn't box from like 1984 to 1987.
That's insane, dude. That's like his prime Mike.
That was when he was a machine. He was at that point. Part of the reason Tyson is so controversial, just in the sport, not his personal life, which is another thing altogether, is because at the time when he was with D'Amato and Kevin Rooney, like, the man lived boxing. He was a monk. He was a warrior monk. Constant training, dude. Like, he was in better shape than everyone he fought, period. And it's like, you know, he fell off, but you can't maintain that long. It's not meant to be long term. But if you took that away from him, that period of time, where he was like a perfectly honed boxing machine, and just said, I'm taking that away from you. That's what they did, the Muhammad Ali. Fucking ridiculous.
Executive Order 10450 stayed probably in effect until 1995, when President Bill Clinton rescinded the order and put in place the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy for admittance of gays into the military.
Was that Clinton?
Yes, it was Clinton.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Hey, Hillary,
in 1990,
we're going to make it Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You see, this way, I don't even have to take any responsibility when those f***s get in the military, you know. Can't say it was my fault.
In 1998, the order's language concerning employment and sexual orientation was also repealed when Clinton signed Executive Order 130-87.
He fucking, he repealed his own thing?
No, he repealed the language of Executive Order 10450.
Oh, the one that we've been...
The one from the 50s. Yeah, he repealed the language from that, but he implemented the policy of Don't Ask, Don't Tell for the military.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Okay.
In 2017, the order was explicit.
Steve, go ahead and fucking interrupt me if I sound like I'm thinking the wrong way tonight, okay? Thank you.
In 2017, the order was explicitly repealed when Barack Obama signed Executive Order 13764.
I knew it. That's why he was such a failure as a president. I mean, how dare he, you know? It's fucking ridiculous.
Both homosexuals and Communist Party members were seen as subversive elements in American society, who all shared the same ideals of anti-theism, rejection of bourgeois culture and middle class morality, and a lack of conformity.
I mean,
they were also seen as scheming and manipulative, and most importantly, would put their own agendas above others in the eyes of the general population.
Gee, I wonder why.
McCarthy also associated homosexuality and communism as "quote unquote" threats to the American way of life.
But why? That's what I'm trying to...
It's his American
Why?
Life. Because it's his American
there you
way
go.
Of life.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. But his particular one.
But homosexuals and communists were perceived as having a hidden subcultures with their own meeting places, literature, cultural codes, and bonds of loyalty. Yeah, because literally they were illegal.
Yeah, also, yeah, it's not like these douchebag fucking white dudes that are making all these goddamn laws, too. They're like, not they're like members of the fucking Freemasons and the Elks and all that other shit, you know? Like, oh, okay.
These dickheads were right, but they were just not right in the way they thought they were right.
They were thought to recruit the psychologically weak or disturbed, and many believed the two were working together to undermine the government. David K. Johnson notes that without an idealized traditional American moral fiber, any citizen could succumb to a moral temptation such as homosexuality, and they could ultimately be seduced by communism. The association of homosexuality with communism proved to be a convenient political tool to develop and implement homophobic discriminatory policy throughout the federal government. I will note that homosexuality was very illegal in the Soviet Union during this time period, or I should say throughout the entirety of the Soviet Union's history. Homosexuality was a jailable offense that would either put you in an insane asylum or a prison.
It's kind of crazy
it would kill
that
you in the Middle East.
Well, it's kind of crazy that they don't exist there now, according to Putin.
Yeah. Putin. I feel like Putin's a little light in the loafers himself. You know what I'm saying? If I just got to throw it out there, don't
kill
me.
Yeah, if you
got
to constantly prove to me you're a man, and your first choice is to become best friends with what's his name, Steven Seagal. I already know where you're coming from, bro.
I'm gonna ride a horseback, shirtless, to show you how much of a man I am, dude. You are overcompensating, my brother. You like cowboy butts, okay? They drive you nuts.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, don't open any envelopes from Russia, all right? And don't shake Putin's hand if you see him. You gotta be careful.
All right, we'll see.
It was easy to convince a Congress dictated by a communist containment policy to respond to the perceived homosexual menace because they were already viewed to be not only a subversive social element in American culture, but also subversive political elements.
Homosexual menace sounds cool for some reason.
New username, do not steal.
That's my Xbox Live name. Shit. Hey, what's your name mean? I'm going to report you. No, there's
homosexual
nothing wrong with
menace.
It, just a homosexual menace, that's all.
Homosexuality was directly linked to social concerns, and more government employees were dismissed because of their homosexual sexual orientation than because they were left-leaning or communists.
Can you imagine if you got Xbox Live messages from kids back in 2007 if your name was Homosexual Menace? Can you imagine the content of messages that you would receive?
Ryan, I'm tired and I don't want to have to edit everything. So just keep it light. Keep it light.
Nah, I won't even go
even
into
if you read yeah,
featured heavily.
Yeah, even if you actually read a regular chat from there, I'd have to cut the we probably have to dump the whole episode. Yeah. It's just gonna
sound
everything.
Like an edited Eminem CD.
Oh my god.
Oh. George Chauncey noted that, quote unquote, the specter of the invisible homosexual, like that of the invisible communist, haunted Cold War America. And homosexuality, and by implication, homosexuals themselves, were constantly referred to not only as a disease, but also as an invasion, like the perceived danger of communism and subversives.
But not like the Beatles, not that kind of invasion.
According to Naoko Shibasawa, visions of the larger world and America's role in it played into the heightened fear and loathing of gays during this period. Shibasawa states that the supposed threat and the rise of homosexuality utilized by competing political economies was compounded by an ideological element to the wave of homophobia that produced the Lavender Scare in post-war America with its connection to empire.
Like the HBO series? Empire?
Well, Empire's Hulu? Yeah, it's like a Hulu series. Okay. That's the one, the record label. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the one that's the blatant ripoff of Danny Glover's Atlanta.
No, it's not a ripoff of Donald Glover's Atlanta.
Donald Glover?
Donald Glover.
Danny Glover.
Riggs.
Well, Atlanta's a comedy. Empire's not.
I don't know. I laughed.
Empire's like, aren't they both about like the record industry in Atlanta, or the music industry in Atlanta?
Yeah.
No. Well, Atlanta's about how his like cousin becomes a rapper, and he tries to become like his manager, and it's like jokes about that. Whereas Empire is like a very serious show about like a record, like a musical dynasty or whatever. Like, because I think Jussie Smollett plays like the son or something. I've never watched it.
Yeah, but you guys are all wrong, dude. Freaking Empire is essentially a carpet company, and the slogan is call 888-2300 Empire
today.
I love it.
You know? Fucking perfect.
Oh, fucking shit's great, right?
Notions about sexuality were part of the narratives that shaped worldviews, defined relationships, and guided action. Agitation about potentially traitorous gays, moreover, derived from efforts to distinguish American civilization or modernity, not only from the Soviets, but also from, quote-unquote, the masses of the decolonizing world.
That's like it's like a gay, like, professional wrestling organization, the traitorous gays versus the homosexual menace. For the AWF, all gay belt.
According to Shibasawa, Americans have been convinced that world decline was inevitable since the Enlightenment period, and thought that the narrative of successful advance toward progress and modernity always ended badly. Since the country's earliest days, Americans looked for signs of quote-unquote over-civilization, and increase in homosexuality was seen as a sign of over-civilization.
What? These people can't get their like, problems straight.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I think the better way to see it is they kind of see it like Roman decadence, like the way like they'd be like, oh, the Roman Empire fell because they became decadent or whatever, and like
it used to
be a narrative that a lot of conservatives would say is it's like it's because of the gays, they let the gays in, and that's where civilization collapsed. It's like, well, it collapsed because nobody paid taxes.
Yeah, it's not the gays, bro.
Oh, dude.
The gays had been there. It wasn't,
there's none.
They just showed up. They weren't, bro, like Mongol hordes. Like, get the fuck
this
out of
nun
here.
In my Catholic school used to say that all the time. But instead of coming out and saying that, she would be like, we're in seventh grade, and she's just like, the Roman Empire ended because of wine and orgy. I'm like, so you're blaming just Dionysus? Just Bacchus? Huh? That's it?
Steven, move your desk out to the hallway.
This fucking skeefoos is moving out of the hallway. All right, sister, see you later.
Shibasawa states that sexuality was an elemental way in which hierarchies of power were rationalized in an imperialist framework. Who was civilized, uncivilized, or worthy or unworthy, and that by the mid-20th century, where rationalizations were deeply informed by a Freudian theory that was ideological and taken and implemented as if it were purely objective science. Because of this, Shibasawa states...
Freudianism interpreted as objective science? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, that's what these people are doing.
Oh my God. Oh my God, fucking idiot. You know
guy?
What that is? You know what interpreting Freud as objective science is? It's saying that the supplement you got off Amazon cured your alopecia. Like, shut the fuck up, okay? Just because you fucking take golden ginseng L-cysteine, that doesn't fucking mean that shit did anything. It's not objective science. Fucking Freud was a quack. He started something, but he wasn't right. Jesus Christ. Fucking idiots.
She's a history professor at Brown University.
Okay.
Yeah, so she's got... Brown University.
Because of this, she states that many domestically believe the United States now played a vital role in stabilizing the global arena formerly controlled by European imperial powers, and such became a recurring theme in larger public discourse.
Well, didn't they do that by monopolizing, like, the U.S. dollar into global currency? Isn't that really what happened?
Well, until Bretton Woods, but yeah.
Yeah.
She states this was evident not only in the loose media, but also in another widely read publication, the magazine Reader's Digest, which served pedagogical, nationalist, internationalist purposes during the Cold War.
Man, I used to love me a Reader's Digest, bro. You know?
Oh, man.
Not even on the shitter, but like we talked about before, like when we were kids, there was just times where there was nothing to fucking do, you know? And you needed something. And, you know, you grab that Reader's Digest and there was always some shit in there, you know? It didn't last long, but it was there for you when you needed it.
Senator Kenneth Wary similarly attempted to invoke a connection between homosexuality and anti-nationalism. He said in an interview with Max Lerner, you can't hardly separate homosexuals from subversives.
Queering didn't make a society.
And later in the same interview, he drew the line between patriotic Americans and gay men. And he said, quote unquote, but look, Lerner, we're both Americans, aren't we? I say let's get these fellows, referring to closeted gay men in government positions, out of the government.
Yeah, where did Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley Senior or Junior fit into this narrative?
Well, they don't come along until they debate each other during the Kennedy election.
I thought we were like past that.
Or the well, actually, it was the Nixon. LBJ.
Yeah. I mean, you know better than me. I've watched the documentary. I don't remember which election it was, but
it was in the 60s. They brought him in because the ratings were so bad.
Yeah.
But they don't really fit into this because they're just talking heads on the TV. This is like talking about like in the actual like government.
Okay. Okay.
The term home intern was coined in the 1930s, possibly by Cyril Connolly, W.H. Auden, or Harold Norse, as a camp term playing off the Comintern of Communist International.
I followed that.
It was first used to describe an imagined group of gay men who controlled the art world, and later used to reference, quote-unquote, a fantastical gay international that sought to control the world. Oh, in 1952, an article written by R.G. Waldeck argued that this conspiracy was a real and important reason to expel homosexual people from the State Department, even more important than the possibility of blackmail, and this article was read into the congressional record and cited by others.
You know, Steve, it's getting to the point where a straight man can't even make a musical, you know? Like, isn't that the argument they're making?
Pretty much.
Why do the gays control... Like. What's sort of the argument that, like, the Trump people make, that they're just, like, that they, like... Like Trump wants like musical theater. Like he wants yeah. like his whole thing was
he went to that he believed that if
they like him and the other like MAGA idiots think that like the second that the clock turned over and he became president that like they got control of culture. Like because they did, you know, Taylor Swift is now a Republican.
That's what happened.
Like that's what, and then when that didn't happen, that's why he got so enraged. That's also why, you know, they're going in and like making the Kennedy Center put on like productions of Oklahoma with like
all white,
all of Trump's mom's favorite plays.
I need the manliest plays on Broadway you could find. Sir, you understand you're asking for manly plays on Broadway. We'll hook you up with Cats.
It's getting to be that a man can't even go to Cats and wear pink, you know?
Now I find that when the cats come into the audience, it's the most masculine part of the play.
See them live at the Winter Garden Theater. Cats. Call 212 Telecharge.
Rum Tum Tugger's a real man.
Rum Tum Tugger. That sounds like a name for like a gooner in the Gooner Olympics, you know.
I mean, it's no R.L. Slimes.
Or... R.L. Slime is the worst one. Ryan, have we sent that to you? The guy with the
Jerk
like
Nowitzki.
He's got like a 10 video set of them now, where it's just him. I guess he's like a comedian, maybe, or just a dude on the internet who had a good joke, but. He's just, like, talking about, like, a gooning group he joined on Facebook.
Oh, my fucking God, please say
like, they, like, meet and do competitions.
Jesus Christ.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, send that to me.
Oh, yeah, I'll find it.
All right. Well, we will finish up next episode. And we will finish up there talking about the the lavender scare and the we will talk about putting the end to it.
People are gonna call us J. Edgar, you know, like we can't even climax in one episode, you know. I gotta have two sessions. Come on.
Hey, spoiler alert for next episode, we ended the lavender scare with Liberace. Okay? That was all it took.
Oh my god!
It was actually Paul Wynn too.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was Liberace, you know, because like he was one of those like kind of.
He was born like 1920 or something, so he would have been right around that time period.
He like crossed the divides, you know, a little bit. I mean, they knew they knew he was gay. Like everyone knew he was gay. My mom talks about it all the time.
He was just so good, though.
He was so good,
so good, though.
How does he do it?
I don't even care if he likes penis. He's so good, though.
Just a bunch of straight guys going around like it's getting to be a man can't even be gay anymore. You know.
There was something I saw like just scrolling one day, like just scrolling the feeds. It was like one of those stupid fucking memes where like some conservative said something stupid, and then somebody replied. He was like, "Fellas, is it gay to be straight?"
Exactly. like it's just such. They're so inconsistent and they're stupid fucking hate.
What's also because like some of them like Nick Fuentes who's like the architect, the starter of the like it's like gay to like women, is himself like very closeted, like homosexual.
Oh yeah,
like he's been outed so many times, and I know like people like on certain like web communities get mad when you like point it out like oh you're just attacking them because their sexuality. It's like no, I'm attacking them because they're a fucking hypocrite.
He's a hypocrite.
He's using like their political power
and
their monetary power to harm homosexuals when they themselves are one. So yes, I think it needs to be pointed out that yes, the person who's leading the like the pogrom against gay people is themselves like pretty homosexual.
Yeah,
he himself is. As my grandfather would call him, a Peter Puffer.
Oh, my God. I'm going to cut that out. all right. Good night, boys.
Good night.
Oh, bye.